welcome to the Time Variance Authority. I'm Miss Minutes. Settle in, sharpen your pencils, and check this out.
Welcome back to I Want My MCU TV, your number one fan site for our most perfect Loki Gator boy. Oh, we love him so much. President of the fan club is here, Lisa Schmeiser, and with me as always are Kelly Gamont.
Swamp Kittens FTW.
And Don Melton.
Yo.
We are here to discuss season one, episode 5 of Loki. Longtime listeners to the podcast will know our every episode has three parts: the recap, where we tell you what's been going on, our reactions to what has been going on, and finally, a little segment we like to call Really?
Really?
Really? Where Kelly and I pelt Don with questions about Marvel Comics lore. He answers and we react with Really? All right. So, having broken it down for new listeners, having welcomed back our old listeners, we're all going to take the pledge of fealty to Loki Gator. Do it in your hearts.
Oh, yes.
Do it in your hearts. Yes. All the pledges are different. And then let's get into the recap of this show. Again, longtime listeners may know that one of our cherished recap rituals is to see who will write and say the recap. I always start off by asking, Don, would you like to do the recap this week?
Golly gosh, no.
Okay. Kelly, would you like to do the recap this week?
I'm still recovering from last week, so no.
All right. Well, then, give me a bass beat. I saw the finest Lokis in comics continuity included in this episode. Child, presidential, scheming, and weary. All brawling in a comic set piece that forces us to ask, what makes a Loki a Loki? Richard E. Grant, wearing an outfit that caused my husband to snicker audibly, yet carrying a weary gravitas as the Loki who eluded Thanos but could not elude loneliness. Richard E. Grant, he, paying fealty to the brother-slaying kid Loki and translating for this show's perfect angel, Loki Gator. Richard E. Grant, best friend to the one Loki who had the good sense to chop off people's hands when they got to be too much, i.e. the Loki president, who teamed up with boastful Loki to overthrow the group that took in our Loki. But our Loki Gator saves the day with a chomp. Our dudes get away. I love our Floridian swamp kitten. So dainty, such a powerful fighter, such a great Loki. And I love how Sylvie gets the information she needs from Ravenna Renslayer, then grabs a tempad and sends herself to the void just so she can get to the mystery of who's really weaving the end of time and so she can get out again if she needs to. Sylvie hooks up with our angel-headed hipster Mobius, the resourceful man driving a pizza delivery car in the void. They find our Lokis, the Child King, the Lonely Old Man, the Perfect Lizard, our 2012 variant. And then it gets fun. Child Loki and the lizard exit left, pursued by the prospect of spin-offs. Classic Loki finds his final, glorious purpose, crafting the illusory Asgard for the void's guard dog Alioth to eat. And then the episode ends on three questions. What's Mobius going to do back at the TVA? What will Loki and Sylvie find now that they've slipped the foggy doggy guarding the gate to the end of time? And is classic Loki right when he says, we cannot change, we're broken, every version of us, forever.
Boom. Boom.
Oh, there you go. Perfect beats, y'all. Thanks. There's our recap. The finest Lokis in all of comics done. Multiple Lokis from multiple different comics all across the MCU. In one place, in one of the funniest fight set pieces we have ever seen. And I think
that's totally valid.
This segues us right into the reaction portion. Where I want it on the record that after last week's, I don't know if I like this episode, the show, I have to say, like, I laughed so hard at so many points during this week's episode.
Didn't you emphasize with our Loki, Prime Loki, saying, would someone please tell me what the hell is going on? I mean, that was just perfect.
I think what I really love is when he opens the hatch and he confronts presidential candidate Loki and just the look on his face is like, Of course. This, how, what else can I reasonably expect? And just like the next 3 minutes are a tour de force of Tom Hiddleston facial expressions. Cause, you know, first you've got him as presidential Loki, who's just chewing up scenery left, right, and center. And that's all deeply hilarious. But then you have our Loki, who like is just face palming in the corner, like all the way through the whole thing. No. Oh God, am I ever this embarrassing? Oh no, this person, my face is doing such horrible things. I loved it. I loved that scene. I couldn't stop laughing.
Delicious.
Well, yeah. I love the one in the beginning before they get in the Lost Isle hatch after being chased by the Lost Isle smoke monster, which I kidded Kelly about because she might have watched one or two episodes of that show. But when he says, when he's enumerating all the things that he's seeing and the fact that, you know, he doesn't know how, even how long it's been since New York. And he says, blah, 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 and an alligator.
I'm heartbroken to report.
It's the resignation in his voice when he says that, where he's like, of course, this is my life now. There's an alligator, Loki.
So I was laughing nonstop from that point until we got to President Loki. I mean, I was just had this huge shite-eating grin on my face the entire time and was like, this is so good.
It was delicious. Just like, it felt very much like everything was being savored by everyone involved.
Oh man.
And I really enjoyed it.
It does bring up a really interesting existential question, which is, how hellish would it be to be in a room with different variants of yourself and see all of your personality traits amplified by other people right back to you?
This is a nightmare. As he said when he got a good, an eyeful of everybody at the top of the hatch,
yeah.
This is a nightmare.
Yeah, like, yeah. No, it's just,
and the way he said it was just, you know, and it's one of those moments where, like, what he's doing isn't funny in the moment. Like, what he's, like, his reaction to all of this is not joy or delight or laughter or anything. And, you know, and from here, it was hysterical. It was so, so funny to watch. And he was great. And I loved all of his iterations. And I loved that everybody who was portraying a Loki was portraying a Loki in some particular way. And at all of the ones that were not Tom Hiddleston were all like Loki right down to the ground, which I really appreciated, which was the thing that stood out to me in the initial ones when we got the first brief conversation with them about, you know, come with us if you want to live, basically, like,
basically,
we had that whole chat. And having that, and having every one of them absolutely be believable as a version of Loki who we had, like, I just loved it. The whole thing was really nicely done.
I very much loved Kid Loki.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, like, he's just brutal. Like, he's just, like, the kid actor. So normally I don't like child actors. I am like, oh, it's a creepy exploitative industry. And also they're not that good at it, so it doesn't justify them being so creepily exploited. But
valid.
Yeah. No, I've actually popped off about this on, like, multiple podcasts. But I will say that for this kid Loki, from when he's like, I killed Thor, all the way to I've eaten wolves and snakes, they both taste the same, and the rest of it, like, he's just like, he's like that scary Michael Hirsch show Vikings, where you're like, oh wow, this is brutal. He will blood eagle you before you wake up in the morning. And I like that it calls back to the fact that Norse mythology is not like a bunch of people with British accents looking for their dad after they park him in the Shady Acres rest home. It's tremendously blunt and funny and violent and has its own rhythms of internal justice all at once. And I like that we get, like, a really Norse Loki and it's a kid. Like, that just makes it so much better. And then he's got the insight where he's like, every time one of us tries to improve and change our lives, we end up here. And I like that basically this whole episode is a bunch of facets of the same essential Loki-ness, all debating what it means to be a Loki and how much of this is within your control and how much of it is without outside your control.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's about can you break out of that horrible, horrible cycle? And I just want to applaud the showrunners and one of my favorite actors that they got the perfect actor to play. He really is, in a way, he's the old version of the prime Loki, because I have a theory about that later on. But Richard E. Grant, because he has the humor and the gravitas to say some of these things. You know, he can say, this is the void, that's Eliath, we're his lunch. Let's go, you know.
Oh, just the way he says it, so matter-of-factly. He's so good in this episode.
Yeah, and what he does, what he's given to do at the end, and how you see the decision playing across his face. And, you know, he has heard what Kid Loki has said about, you know, predestination, fate, and everything. And that's also a lesson for our Loki. It's just, it's so good. It's like, can you break free of this fate? Because in a way, the TVA, this big organization that says, you know, time must be this way, is like those powers in your life that say you can only play, you can only color inside these lines.
Yeah.
Right? It is all coming back around to this story. This is a way for Loki as a character to evolve and change. And they're basically using these fantastic circumstances for him to come to terms with himself. And this hellish way that he has to do it. It was just like such a delightful glass of Roxy wine Pinot Noir to drink. I mean, I actually like this episode better than the first episode, and I like that episode a lot.
You really do, yeah.
Well, Don, I have a feeling you like this episode so much because of the deep Marvel lore and background. Before we get to
crap, are you kidding? This was worse than WandaVision.
I'm going to go with 60% of Don's enjoyment of this episode is what I call the RF, which is the Richard E. Grant factor.
Ah. Yes.
I mean, I feel like there's not a lot we can say about Richard E. Grant because we're in violent agreement that his performance was fantastic.
Yes.
He was a tragic hero by the end of this, which is pretty much the best that a Loki can hope to be, one hopes.
And our Loki may wind up being a tragic hero in the final episode, too.
Well, I think the Richard E. Grant one, you have to consider how many other Lokis he had to outwit, outlast, and outplay, as it were.
Yeah.
Because remember in like episode 2 when they show all the other Lokis that they've apprehended and sent to the void, like those guys didn't show up. So either there's like another...
Oh, no, actually one of them did.
Okay.
I'll give you an O'Reilly right here.
Okay.
You mean when we get the little holograms of all of them? Like
one of the hologram guys shows up?
The bearded Loki leaning over Vote Loki / President Loki's into the hatch.
That's... Oh, the one with like the handmade horns on his thing? That guy?
He's the one with the big beard and he does have horns. I can't recall what... They're not handmade, but they don't look as fancy. He's variant number L8914.
I was holding out hope for cricket playing Loki myself. But
there you go.
But yeah, we can also all agree. I think you can make an argument that this whole show is about, you know, who am I? And how much of me is beyond my control? How much of my sense of who I am is beyond my control and how much is not? But you could probably also make an argument that Richard E. Grant's Loki, the classic Loki, decided to sacrifice himself in the service of a greater Loki good. And so maybe the way a Loki changes is to just like lean into liking themselves or the idea of themselves, because this is something else that comes up over and over again through the series. Loki's not a big fan of himself.
No. And everyone says that he is, which is the thing that I think is so interesting about Loki.
And then you see over the course of this episode, they're also generally not big fans of each other.
Our Loki is a big fan of Sylvie, and he tells the other ones, I've got to help her.
Yeah.
In other words, he's no longer thinking it's
about Loki.
He's no longer thinking about himself. It's like he believes in Sylvie.
Mm-hmm.
He even says
that's what makes her great.
Yeah.
So this is interesting because you could argue, well, it's just a form of Loki learning to like himself because Sylvie is a version of himself that's really good at being Sylvie. But you have both our Loki and Richard E. Grant saying, okay, we're going to sacrifice ourselves. We're going to commit ourselves to a cause that's bigger than ourselves. And this is the moment where I think, like, it should count as a Nexus event because it shows that, yes, Lokis can change. And heaven help you when they start working together.
Yes.
Right.
Because then they can get my sweet boy on the throne.
Yeah, they don't just work against each other like what turned into pandemonium in the Hatch. There are things that they can do together. I think that's something our Loki realized too. The big telling thing for me was when Sylvie gave him the tempad, and then he looks at it and considers it, and he turns around and gives it to Mobius.
Yeah.
And then the total sweetness was the other Loki saying, no, we're not leaving either.
Yeah. They commit themselves to a cause that's bigger. Can we also talk for a bit about Mobius and how he gets that total hero entrance in this episode?
Yes.
Because we saw the car driving up, and for a moment I thought, okay, maybe it's one of our Lokis and they have a car somewhere. And then you see it's Mobius who has managed to be resourceful enough to stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it's
in Loki land, I might add. He's the only non-Loki that we see. So like when they're all lined up there at the end, all I could think was one of these things, not like the other.
Yes.
Yeah. He was great. I just assumed car Loki, honestly. Like, I don't know how that works, but it's auto Loki.
Like a taxi cab driving Loki. Like it's Danny DeVito behind the wheel with like horns all.
Hey! No, it was just the car, you know, like Harry Potter.
Oh, no,
you know, the Loki
no. Like, oh, my gosh.
I'm like, oh, this is what we're doing now. Okay.
Well, and then you have like another car drive up with Owen Wilson's voice and the Disney assimilation is complete because at this point it's like Cars 5.
That's why I was like, I see what you did there. Yeah.
No, I just like the idea that there's like a taxi cab driving Loki and it's a shout out to the TV show Taxi and it's Danny DeVito behind the wheel with horns on all. Hey, how are you?
I didn't even consider that, but I would totally watch that whole show. Totally.
I would watch
that
show every day and twice on Sunday.
Yeah,
it'd be a great
exactly.
show. Because see, that if there's an existence of that iteration of Loki, then there's also the Christopher Lloyd from Taxi iteration of Loki.
Only he drives like a DeLorean because now we're bringing in the Back to the Future stuff as well.
Let's just bring it all in. Just back up the truck and, you know.
Corporate consolidation is a hell of a creative drug.
There you go.
This was a great episode because it's the first one where I didn't feel like everybody was double dealing. Like there's just no more artifice left.
I mean, we had some, but it was clear.
Well, yeah, because like Ravenna's all sure. There's what I thought was notable is Miss Minutes is the one who suggests the spaceship faint.
The BS spaceship.
Yeah. This suggests she's not just an. She's not Siri.
She's sentient.
Yeah. Exactly.
Or something.
She's not Siri, in other words. She's
new.
And my question, which will probably never ever get answered, is. My question is, has she had to do that before? Is that why they have this feint that she and Ravenna have cooked up? Because if you're resetting and sending people to the void all the time and washing their brains out, then maybe you already have a procedure for this somewhere.
I'll get to my theories about Ravenna later on, but Miss Minutes, and when we see the inside of the TVA, the sort of floor area outside the buildings, and we look outside the windows, we see a statue of the three space robot lizards. But we also see a statue down there of Miss Minutes. I don't know if you guys noticed that from the first episode.
No. No.
She's in a statue down there.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Okay, we're moving now to this prompts it. Segment number three. Really?
Really?
Really? There's this. Oh, my God. I'm going to have to Google this now. So Miss Minutes in a statue.
Yeah, she's, there's I'll find you a screenshot of that later on. So,
God help me if, like, episode six is nothing but, like, Tom Hiddleston talking to a hologram of Miss Minutes. That's just, I don't know how I'll feel about that.
I think there are four possibilities for who's behind the curtain, but I'll get to that. But first, what I'd like to do for our listeners, because I tormented myself since Wednesday?
Yes.
Wednesday, going through and enumerating all these stupid things that are flashed in the foreground, the background, and everything else in this episode, consulting the YouTube and other nerds and searching around to interwebs and all that stuff. And I'd like to just go through a stream of conscience list here. It'll only take a couple of minutes, and you can pause and we can talk about some of them during the list. First, I'd like to talk about the title of the episode. Did any of you get what the reference was to that?
No, tell us.
Journey into Mystery. I just laughed my ass off when I saw the title, because that's the name of the comic book that Thor and Loki debuted in, issue number 85, August 1962. It wasn't retitled as Thor until issue number 126. In March of 1966. So Journey into Mystery, hysterically funny. There are so many call-outs to comic book history and just generalized nerds in here. So some of the things we see, some big objects and things in the background that we see here that are very interesting. The Lighthouse of Alexandria. That's how we start the zoom in after the previously on.
Okay.
We see that later on when... the pizza truck shows up. We do see the pyramids of Giza and the Sphinx. And did you notice it actually had its nose?
Yes.
Yes.
The Frenchies hadn't gotten to it yet.
We also, see in various points of the episode, we see some ruins in the background that I don't think are Stonehenge, because I've been to Stonehenge and that doesn't look quite like Stonehenge. We see the Golden Gate and Bay Bridges mashed together. That's what it looked like to me.
Yeah.
My daughter and I were debating what those bridges were because we couldn't figure out if it was one of the New York bridges. And she's like, no, that's the Golden Gate, but there's too many suspension cables.
There's four. Yeah. And so the Bay Bridge, they were like every other it was really weird. Anyway, we also have, I don't know if you noticed this, right after we see the Lighthouse of Alexandria, if you look off to the left, you'll see the Sanctum Sanctorum of Doctor Strange from 177A Bleecker Street, New York City. We also, as we go into the city proper, we'll see the Stark Tower, Avengers Tower, but it doesn't have Stark or the Avengers A on it. It has Q-E-N-G on it. Do you all know where that's from?
No, please tell us.
Okay, that's you pronounce it Kang, or you can pronounce it Q-Eng. This was a
Kang,
front
huh?
company. Yeah, it's Kang the Conqueror.
So wait a minute. There's a front company pronounced Kang, and literally no one realizes it's a front company for Kang the Conqueror.
It's like Superman and Clark Kent. How long have they been walking around? The only difference between the two of them is a pair of freaking eyeglasses.
That's like one of my favorite SNL sketches, is where I was like, sure, Clark Kent, you're getting a scoop from Superman.
Right, so yeah. Same thing. This is back from Avengers Ultron Forever, number one, back in, and it's recent. It's from April 2015, Kang Enterprises.
Okay.
And one of Kang's many offshoots in time of himself. Remember, there's eventually a Council of Kangs. That's how nutty this character gets.
That I remember.
But he purchases the Stark slash Avengers Tower from Tony Stark. Tony Stark sends the Vision to check it out, make sure that he didn't leave anything behind. That's when Mr. Griffin, who's basically Kang the Conqueror, Nathaniel Richards, brainwashes the Vision and has him turn on everybody again, like for the third time. But we also see in the pan down here, we see a separate building that says Ken Park 2018. I swear to God, that's what it is. And I have no idea what that's a reference to. QEN Park 2018. Mm-hmm. Is it some other Kang reference from? I searched high and low. I don't know about that. We see a couple of ships. We see what I think is the wreck of the Santa Maria. You know, mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know what that is, right? That's the mm-hmm. ship that didn't quite make it to the New World. We also see the USS Eldridge, which,
yes.
if you're familiar with that ship from World War II era ship, this was the Philadelphia experiment ship, you know, supposedly
okay.
that had been vanished or whatever. And so that was the inside joke. We see Yellow Jacket's head on the ground in the background. Did you notice that? The giant Yellow Jacket's head from the first Ant-Man film, the villain there.
I did notice that. Mm-hmm.
Did you notice the Living Tribunal's head in the background?
No. Tell us more about the Living Tribunal, please.
The Living Tribunal first appeared in Strange Tales number 157, June of 1967. He's been around for a while. And he's like he's this three-headed, and he has no neck. I mean, his head just floats above his shoulders. It's really a cool design.
Kind of like
by
those birds?
Yeah, kind of like the eggs, but he does not have five legs like the birds.
Okay.
Five sausage legs, by the way. They were disturbing. He was, I think the Living Tribunal was created by Jim Starlin. Anyway, he's like this judge of all the multiverse and stuff, but he winds up getting killed, I think, a couple of times in the Marvel Comics. It's kind of confusing. But if you remember Doctor Strange, remember when Doctor Strange has his first, you know, fighting training session with, Chiwetel Ejiofor as Baron Mordo, and mm-hmm. Baron Mordo whips out this thing that says, "This is the staff of the Living Tribunal." That's the only time it's been mentioned in the MCU, which really had me going sad. So the Living Tribunal's head. We saw the Dark Aster crashed in the background. Did you notice that one from Guardians of the Galaxy, Ronan's ship?
I thought that. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
We saw a helicarrier, a shield helicarrier, but it seems to have, and I paused, and I don't have the 4K version, but it looks like it has a red Hydra logo on the deck.
Oh, that would be that must be where Captain America didn't keep them from being taken down.
Bingo.
Yes. Bingo.
We also saw what looks to be Red Skull's escape craft from Captain America, the first Avenger. Mm-hmm. All broken up and everything. And then there's the Thanos copter, which is a real thing when Marvel was trying to dive
the Thanos copter.
Didn't you notice that it was a yellow helicopter with Thanos on the side?
There's a lot to pay attention to. And honestly, most of the time I was looking for an alligator.
Yeah. Well, your true love.
I love that sweep. Oh my God, he's perfect, you guys.
Yeah, there you go.
He took down the Loki for president. Oh, it was so great.
Well,
I'll
get to him in a little bit too.
Yes.
So the Thanos copter was when Marvel was digging deep into trying to make some money from merchandising, my suspicion. That's from Spidey Super Stories number 39, March of 1979.
Mm-hmm. The peak of Star Wars action figure merchandising.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Marvel wanted in on some of that.
Yeah, and so they did the stupid Thanos copter. Did you ever wonder why in Endgame, when Thanos is holding his weapon, and it looks like two helicopter blades? Go back and look at it. That is a call out to the stupid Thanos copter. Did you all see the flying saucer in the ground there? Nobody online knows where that freaking flying saucer is from. It is not, I can tell you, the ship from John Carpenter's The Thing.
Okay, I have to be honest. The first time I saw the flying saucer, I was like, is that the saucer of the Starfleet Enterprise?
No, it's not that either.
Are they making a cheeky... I was like...
would love that.
I was sort of hoping it was, to be honest with you. Now I am too. Mm-hmm.
Now, it wasn't that either. I've went over it. I've used image recognition software. Nobody
really
knows what that is.
Oh yeah. My gosh. Really?
Really?
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome.
I took it as like they're just that there's a timeline where they did try to make contact.
Yes.
And this is that this got, it got pruned because it wasn't time for them to find Earthlings yet. And so that's what it was.
I could buy into it if you could show me the design from the Star Trek universe that thing actually looks like. There's also a prototype that was never built, a Chrysler TV-8 nuclear powered tank. Remember where the crazy birds with the round heads and the five sausage legs are running out the end of a tank turret?
Mm-hmm. Yes, creepy pigeons. Yes.
Yeah, the creepy pigeons. That's a Chrysler TV-8 nuclear-powered tank. I did not recognize it. Somebody else online did. I give shout out to that. Then we have the skinny pizza truck, and I mm-hmm. want to crush people's hopes and dreams. That is not the Pizza Planet truck from Pixar, even though it has a cooler girl on the dashboard. But when you think about it, it's being driven by Lightning McQueen, right?
Yes, exactly. Yes, it is.
So I did chuckle to myself mm-hmm. about that should be. I think what I said to Mr. Kelly as we were watching was that should be a Pizza Planet truck.
Yeah, that should be. But did you notice when it spun around the license plate? You'll love this, Kelly, because
no.
you got me last week on this. The license plate is GRNW1D. I didn't notice it until the second time.
Nice.
Who is that? Who is that, Kelly?
Mark Grunewald.
Exactly.
He created the TVA. Yes. That's his second, like, the second wink we got to him, I think.
And we may have a third wink. I'll get to that shortly. did you all notice the stacks and stacks everywhere of TVA cafeteria trays?
No. So how?
Because you can tell they're TVA cafeteria trays because they all have that that stupid drink that Mobius was drinking.
So I'm super curious. How? Do people just... Is that how the kitchen is getting rid of people's...
That's one guy's theory online. Yeah.
Lunch is after the commissary. He's like, I don't want to have to wash it. I'll just zap. Uh-huh.
They get one of those little stabby things. Yeah, into the void, right? So we also see when they go down in the hatch that's not from Lost, which apparently has...
Says you.
Yeah, which apparently has Hindi writing on it. I don't know what the hell it says, but it's Hindi writing on it.
So I was trying to figure out that whole area where they have their little... Their little wine time.
Yeah.
Wine and juice
is it a bowling alley?
Well, it's a bowling alley. I'll get to that. But before we get there, going down, we see what? Mjolnir. And then, then my man, Throg. Now, this is, a lot of people did not catch this because it goes by so fast. And there's so many call outs out here. You may not know this, but Thor was turned into a frog by Loki in Thor number 364. This is back from 1986, February of 86. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the following issue, we're introduced to the character that would become Throg, Thor number 365. Did you notice the variant label on the little jar with the frog with the Thor helmet? It says T365 on it. This was the dead giveaway.
It's totally Throg.
Yeah, it's totally Throg. Yeah. And by the way, the character's name, Throg, is actually started out in life as a human named Simon Walterson. Which is a play on Walt Simonson, the writer and artist, but he takes the name Puddle Gump.
I remember that.
Thor helps him, defeat these other minions, and eventually Puddle Gump gets a splinter of Mjolnir and becomes Throg, and then goes off. And I forget what the name of the series was, but it's like all the Avengers and X-Men and Inhumans, pets. It's a crazy thing. You know, Marvel has done everything.
Yeah.
If you could imagine it, it's been in a Marvel continuity somewhere.
Yes.
So in the bowling alley, and that's a very strange bowling alley.
It is a bowling alley.
Yeah. And I already did the joke about Roxy Wine and the... and Kid Thor drinking Ecto Cooler High C, which is a real thing, by the way.
Oh, I drank it so much.
So my crackpot, I was wondering if it's a bowling alley on like an airport aircraft carrier or something, where it's like, okay, we have to entertain the soldiers somehow. They're in the middle of nowhere. And this aircraft carrier crashed, and some Lokis have since turned it into an easily defensible bunker situation.
It is entirely possible, because the lid to the hatch might have been from one of India's nuclear submarines.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's one theory online, and why it looks like, why they would have a bowling alley inside, I have no idea. But did you notice the console games, arcade games in the background? There's one called that has the label and style Polybius, which was later turned into, I think, about a decade ago, into a real PlayStation game, I think. But there was a rumor back in the early 80s, I think it was 1981, that the CIA had constructed arcade console, games to do mind control experiments on people, on kids and stuff like that. So,
oh, yeah, I remember that story.
Yeah. So now I want to talk about some of the characters in here. Oh, the other Mark Gruenewald possible reference, but it may be a Stan Lee reference. Did you notice in the TVA mural behind Sylvie and Ravonna?
Yes, I did.
This bearded guy. Oh, yeah. He's off on side, this bearded, short bearded guy. So that's got to be either Mark Gruenewald or a tribute to Stan Lee, one or the other. I can't decide which one.
There's a place in the TVA, there's like a poster that very much looks like early mid 70s Stan Lee, with like the full hair and the big glasses and the janitor broom mustache, the Ted Lasso mustache, and all of it. Like there's and I saw somebody at the time, once we got a good look at the TVA in the first episode, somebody pointed out, like, here's Stan Lee's cameo in this one.
Yes. So. Yes. Yeah. And so I think that's the same part of the mural. So
yeah, I think it's that same bit. Yeah.
So President Loki, by the way, is from the Vote Loki comic series that came out in the summer of 2016.
Yes.
And I swear, the guy who did the cover for that comic probably based the drawing on Tom Hiddleston. He should get residuals for it. But it looks so much like the way Hiddleston looked when he leaned down there in the hatch to look at our Loki. I mean, just the way the crown was, his uniform, the badge, everything. It was totally a nod to Vote Loki. Which, by the way, I did not read, because the summer of 2016, I didn't want to read anything funny about the upcoming election. Trust me on that.
Same.
Yeah. All right. So let's get to the refugee from Lost, the smoke monster. So I got to say, that was a really accurate portrayal of Eliath, actually scarier than the comics.
So this is one of my questions, is have we seen Eliath before? And I don't mean in Lost, although I will tell you that Mr. Kelly said, didn't we already watch a show about this once already? So he picked it up too. But I wanted to know, because I don't remember an Eliath from the comics. And so that was like one of my questions for the professor today.
Well, it was a special series, which I had to look up because I don't remember reading it either, from July of 93, called Avengers, The Terminatrix Objective. And the Terminatrix, by the way, is one of the many aliases of Ravonna Renslayer.
Wow. Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that's.
I love
that's
that we're setting her up to be a big daddy.
I gotta hear a really from that one.
Because, really?
Yeah. Thank you. Because that one dovetails into my theory, which I'd like to bomb you on. Because, like I said, I think there are four possibilities.
Before we get there, Lisa, do you have questions?
No.
About any of the comics.
Just frantically taking notes from Professor Don. And,
okay.
I'm told this will count for 25% of our final grade.
That's, I think it's 25%. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yes. So
Kelly, did
Don,
you have...
hit us with your theories. Okay. My first one was, do we remember... Or where is Eliath from? Like, what's the deal with that? Because
let
I didn't
me
remember
a,
it.
Let me give some background on that. So Eliath is he's a being that controls the temporal limbo, right?
Okay.
And he was, by the way, also created by Mark Grunewald.
Mm-hmm.
And he really owns all the timelines before sort of the dawn of man. In fact, his time empire is bigger than Kang's himself. Two to three times as big as Kang's temporal empire.
So it would make sense for Eliath to be involved in what we're seeing here.
Yes.
Because that's kind of his jam.
But him being the lapdog of Kang, I'm not so sure about that. The guard dog of Kang, I'm not so sure about that. But where he's introduced, the person that sort of lets him out of his cage or brings him into this, Kang created this barrier to prevent Eliath from entering his domain, but it was Ravonna the Terminatrix that let him free. And she actually has to ask the Avengers for help in, you know, putting the gin back in the bottle.
Reeling it back in.
So anyway, it makes sense for him to be running the void. Now, my theory is, I think we have four choices for who's in the Citadel we see as the smoke clears there.
Okay. Hello and welcome to my house.
Yes.
Have a seat, Don. So let me put on another pot of gin for you.
So
here you go.
It's either Kang, the Conqueror, because, you know, he's the big Time Lord.
Yes.
So to speak. In Marvel Comics. But we know Kang's going to be in the new Ant-Man movie, so why the hell would Marvel, you know, reveal him now?
Right.
Why shoot that first? So that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Now, it could be Doctor Doom, because Doctor Doom is another figure who's tied to Kang.
He
invented his own time machine, right? And so kind of looks like Doom's castle in Latveria, maybe, that we see.
Okay.
Don't know. That's a possibility. But again, why would they introduce Dr. Doom, who didn't have that much to do with Loki in the comics necessarily?
And is generally associated with Fantastic Four.
Right. And we know the Fantastic Four movie is coming. So why would they blow him on this? Or it could be, boringly, another Loki variant.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly played by our man, Richard E. Grant. We don't know. I think that's a possibility, but it would take some of the edge about the whole coming to terms with being Loki here. Who I think it is, I think who's in the castle is the real Ravonna Renslayer. Mm. And the Ravonna that we've seen all along for 7 episodes
is a
variant.
That they brainwashed to reinforce everything ruthlessly.
Right.
Because
mm-hmm.
it amuses her.
She doesn't know her whole background, and she doesn't know that she's, you know, Kang's significant other or girlfriend or whatever you want to call.
Or assassin.
Yeah,
you
or
know,
assassin.
Take your pick.
Take your pick, yeah. Whatever weird relationship you want to go. And so that's who I think is in the Citadel, because it works perfectly for bringing the show back in a loop.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. it's conservation of energy and casting.
Well, so here's my my theory based on your theory, because I thought Ravonna was behind the whole thing, but the Ravonna that we've had so far is not.
Yes.
Doesn't seem like she is. It seems like she definitely has her own agenda and she definitely has the things that she's trying to do. Mm. But I don't think she's who we're going to end up seeing at the end.
She's this Ravonna is an institutionalist. Because they go to great pains. They go to great pains in this episode to point out that she wants to find out why she was lied to, but she doesn't value that as highly as she values a smooth and orderly TVA. Mm-hmm. And B-15 is like,
she straight up lays it out to B-15.
And then B-15 is like, well, you know what? You're going to fail because Sylvia is a lot more motivated than you are. She needs to find out. Whereas for you, it's just a nice to do, not a have to do. Yeah,
you want it. She needs it, which I appreciate.
No, Ravonna's one of those. This Ravonna strikes me as somebody who likes her skill set and her competency within the TVA. And mm-hmm. she's not going to go poking away at the truth of the matter, because what that means is she might put herself out of a job.
Exactly. In fact, she tells Miss Minutes, mm-hmm. yeah. we've got to find out about this so we can protect that person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's because part of her programming when our memory was wiped as a variant was, mm-hmm. you're supposed to look out for me.
Yeah.
You know, why was she promoted to judge when she blew mm-hmm. bringing Sylvie in?
Yeah.
Because upstairs is mm-hmm. also her. So mm-hmm. the real her wants her proxy to be in there.
Okay. So what if, see, you just, because I had the, because what if, and this falls into my theory from last week, which was sort of like, I'm going to say this because, of course, it's going to be kind of funny. But now I'm thinking about it more. So first of all, Don, I thought until a minute ago, I thought that your Ravonna theory holds water because we're going to get a shadowy mention that Ravonna's not working entirely by herself. And that's going to be the setup for Kang in the Ant-Man movie. Yeah.
I agree. But, I agree, actually. I think that's a great codicil. Mm-hmm.
But now I think at the end, we're going to find out it's a Mobius, because that would be why Mobius is Ravonna's favorite. And that gives us the Mobius coming back on himself, mm-hmm. which is the thing I said last week that I thought was kind of funny, but like actually means that like his whole plot twist came to us right at the beginning when he told us his name is Mobius M. Mobius.
Right. And I'd say that was a fifth possibility and a good use. A sixth possibility, of course, is that it's been Agatha all along. but that's a bit of a stretch. So I want to say on the Ravonna theory, I have not heard anybody online pull that one out of their hiney. So
well,
I
there you go. So
the variant theory,
the mm-hmm. variant, and it's the real Ravonna.
Okay. So we are the official. We are the official fan club of record for Loki Gator, and we are also the official source of record for Don's fantastic theory about who's in the castle.
I also want to point out to our listeners that I've been horribly wrong about theories for other shows, so my track record ain't great.
Well, of course, but we don't care.
No, it's like putting out a theory on a Marvel show is like running on a treadmill where you're like, oh, it's entertaining and it gets the job done, and in the end you're really not that much further than where you started, but you've had fun doing it.
Yeah.
So the other thing, the more important thing in a way mm-hmm. than who is behind it all and who's in the Citadel is what else happens. I mean, I can't believe the longest episode they've had so far of any of the Marvel shows was 61 minutes for that one episode, Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. And I think the longest Loki episodes so far has been like 52 minutes.
Okay.
So how the heck are they going to cram tying all these things together? But How are they also going to plan for the thing that I made Kelly's head explode on in our messages chat yesterday, the second season? Because Kelly apparently was the only person in the universe who didn't know it had already got renewed.
I was, in fact, the last. Yes. So.
So I'm even more
excited about that because, well, mostly because that gives me a lot of relief, because like a thing that I did, you know, we've been talking about Lost so much already. A thing I did with Lost was like, I think it was at the end of season three. They said, this is how much more show we're going to do the end. Like they said, like, we set it up. It's going to be three more seasons. It's going to be da 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 da. And so like I was counting down, and so I would be like, they've introduced all these new things and they have 26 hours left. They have, you know, 15 hours left. They have 8 hours left. Mm-hmm. How are we going to get there? And so I feel like there's a lot less pressure mm-hmm. on this show now because they don't have to answer everything because this isn't one and done. Yeah. And so I feel a lot better because like I don't feel like anytime they show me literally anything, mm-hmm. I have to be like, am I ever going to get an answer to this now? Because I have a whole other season of this that I'm going to get later that's going to be great. So,
what we don't know is if that second season is going to have anything to do with the Time Variance Authority.
Right.
Or any of the characters that we've met so far.
Oh,
you know,
please,
is
let this
Mobius...
entire second season be nothing but alligators. Please.
Okay, Kelly, I think we've lost Lisa.
She's just distracted. So it's delightful, fine. You guys. I love alligators to begin with. And what I loved about this episode was also the, like, well, we think he's a Loki. He could also be lying, which is a very Loki thing to do. And I like how they're like, well, he qualifies. Either he's a liar or he's clever and he's green. That's enough. And like, what I want to know is, where did the horns come from? Like, was he zapped into the void wearing the horns, or did like one of his little Loki pals make him some? I have so many questions.
Many questions about Loki Gator.
Oh my God, I love him so much, though. He's so cute, and
he's fantastic,
and he's young. He's still a baby. He's so small. That's how you know he's still young. He's like a little teen alligator. It's so sad.
Ooh, angsty Loki.
They're two kid Lokis, right?
Yes, exactly. Like, I want to see the series where the two of them have adventures together, and they're both growing up together.
They do hang out. That. Like, they're the two that are, like, together the most. Yes. He picks them up and carries them around all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
anyway.
I love it.
There's a lot of stuff to be resolved, even if this isn't the last season. But I would like to know what the thematic change is. Are there going to be any fundamental changes to our Loki's character?
Mm. Well, I think we've already, so bear in mind, I'm the one who's cynical because you all last week are like, oh, he's connecting with Sylvie and I'm all, it's an act.
That's true. Yes.
For example, I bought Richard E. Grant's whole thing because he had made an argument over the course of the episode that Lokis are locked into a particular narrative pattern and they play a particular narrative role in universes. And when you break out of that, that's when you're smacked down for it. And at the end, he manages to subvert the story while sticking true to the Loki-ness of it all, right? So I think that by having our Loki say things like, I've betrayed everyone who's ever loved me, but I won't betray you, and by actually sticking with the Lokis who don't betray him or anybody else the way that boastful Loki does, and the way he deals with Mobius in this episode, I'm going to tentatively make the argument that this Loki is as capable of change as the original Tom Hiddleston Loki, whom we saw change over the course of several movies. So maybe this... Hiddleston is gold for this franchise. And I'm sure that there's been a lot of meetings with how do we keep this guy going and keep him happy and give him work that he's willing to do so that the press tours don't look like a forced march. And, you know, giving him a whole, and this is how Loki became a real boy story in the first season of Loki is a great start to that. And it also keeps him in the back pocket for future movie pop-ups.
Yep.
you know.
And now that we know a multiverse is coming.
Yes. Yeah. It'd be nice if he just pops in here and there and is like, hello. And everyone's like, oh, crap.
I really enjoy that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. I like where this has gone so far. I like where it's going. I like what they're doing here. And honestly, this is some of the most inventive TV. As the episode unfolded, mm-hmm. I just had no idea where it was going. Just, mm-hmm. well, it's all a surprise. And yeah. I love watching TV like that, where I can't figure it out.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I like about it, too, is the inscrutable and the like, I like when I feel like this episode had a little bit of balance because we saw what was happening. We saw what they were doing. We knew what they, like, what they thought they could do based on what they were up against. But also, we had absolute, at the same time, we had no idea what was happening. And it's hard to do both of those things and have both of them feel reasonable. And this time, I feel like we got that very much.
Yep. I want to see how episode 6 is before I'm all, oh, let's, just because, again, I had a really hard time accessing this show mm-hmm. because there was nothing, there was no way to really get a hook on it, as it were. Mm-hmm. Who, you know, you didn't know what anyone's character motivations were. You didn't know who was lying and why. And I'm still not in love with the romantic subplot between Loki and Sylvie. I feel like it's unnecessary. You know, just, mm-hmm. we don't need to have it. But I will say that episode 5 went a long way towards addressing many of my misgivings, and I'm kind of excited to see things blow up next week. So,
yeah, it's going to be fun. Yeah. Now, I like you, like, I didn't like the romantic piece of it, but I saw just genuine affection mm-hmm. between them, and it was, to me, at least until we're all cuddled up under a tablecloth, I didn't see a whole lot of it being all that, you know, romantical or anything. So I thought, like, at least initially, it was just sort of him feeling like he had an actual friend and like an honest ally in this, even though, like, he is choosing to put his faith in her and all of that. So to me, that was the piece. So, like, it was a nice moment between them, but I wanted it to not be quite so romantical. Like, I watch other stuff for that. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm with you on that one. But if they can make it something interesting, then, like, you know, my opinion will shift. So, yeah.
All right. So before we wrap this up, and we should wrap this up because I have to get back to drawing fan art of Loki Gator.
Bingo. Priorities.
Yeah. I have to learn how to draw first, but I'm not going to let that get in my way.
I know a guy. He used to draw underground comics.
There you go.
Before we wrap up, let's talk about what is the one thing, aside from my sweet green prince Loki Gator, that you want to see in next week's episode. What is the one thing that will leave you super happy with the episode when you see it next week? Don.
Oh, that is a good question. I want to see something unexpected. I want to see a future for some of these favorite characters of mine. That I've come to like, and I would desperately love to see Casey again.
To see if he finally learns what fish are.
Yes,
that was my answer. Casey. The correct answer is Casey.
Yes, we did not get enough Eugene Cordero for the show.
No, we did not. Thank you for pointing that out.
Oh, I'd also like to see what's really, I think Kelly or you said this earlier, what's really up with Miss Minutes?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my line item, since you stole Casey out from under me.
It's not a draft. We can all want the same things here. Uh-huh.
So plus one Casey. Uh-huh. But additionally, I want some Miss Minutes answers. Even if they ultimately lead to more questions, I just want a clearer idea of her deal. Mm-hmm. That's, like, that part is really all I want. Now, if that sets up something for the next season or for a whole nother movie or whatever, like, awesome. But I really want to get some resolution on what her deal is.
I'd also like to see Hunter B-15 help Mobius burn it all down.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, more Mobius, I think, would be good as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I would like to see Mobius meet another Mobius. That's what I want to see. Is I want to see.
Oh, that would be a good one.
It has to happen. His name is Mobius.
Well, yeah, I want to see reveal that Ravenna's got multiple Mobiuses. And
we got to see our boy on a jet ski, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And a jet ski. Yeah.
With an alligator dancing in his wake. Sorry, I got excited there for a moment.
No, you know, it'll happen. He'll be the he drives the boat, Lisa.
Yeah. Oh my God! Can you imagine his tiny little arms? Oh my goodness!
So I saw some fan art last night on Reddit, which was done in the style of a Pixar movie.
Oh my goodness!
Which I'll see if I can find it, but it's Mobius on a jet ski with Loki and Sylvie.
Oh,
and the top comment, Lisa. This is just for you. The top comment. This was on Reddit. On the artwork was, where's Loki Gator?
Yeah, yeah, okay, all right. So, no, I would like to see multiple Mobiuses just because it would be super interesting to see if they like all band together to burn it down, or if they get distracted by a jet ski, or if they're all like, wait, Ravenna told me I was special, and that's what.
That was my theory, is that Mobius finds out that there are other Mobies, and that I thought that would be the thing that flipped him, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah.
Interesting.
We'll see.
By the way, all the research I did this week, I did without the help of my sister, who is, ironically, has not seen the episode yet, and I've been unable to reach consistently because she is at Disney World.
Ah.
So.
Well, I hope she's having a good time. All right.
Yeah, that's fair.
The only thing I've heard from her is a text where she said, I've been captured by the First Order. We're being brutally interrogated now. So I think she's having a good time.
That sounds like my favorite thing. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, I feel like we've traveled a long way here. We've all fulfilled our glorious purpose. And let's wrap up this episode in anticipation for the one that's dropping in the next few days. I want to thank everybody who's been tuning in for I Want My MCU TV. It has been such a delight to hear from you guys on Twitter. And if you are members of The Incomparable, you know you can reach out on the members only Slack and we'll chat there too. I fully expect all of you to join my alligator fan channel. And I want to issue big ups to my endlessly patient co-host, Kelly Gamont.
For all time, always.
And Don Melton.
Yo.
I'm Lisa Schmeiser, and this has been the latest episode of I Want My MCU TV.
For all time,
always.